Welcome to Preheated, kitchen wisdom and friendly chat from two friends who love to bake. I'm Stefan Cohn.
And I'm Andrea Ballard.
Every week, we celebrate the successes, failures, learning, and laughs that go hand in hand with baking for those we love. On today's show, we're talking about our favorite holiday baking tradition, cookies, and reviewing our fudge from last week. We're also welcoming our first preheated guest, Anne Lundholm of Stick of Butter Studios, who's going to chat with Andrea about her baking background and favorite treats. Finally, we'll share some cute and clever ways to package all of your delicious gifts. So pour yourself a cup of coffee and get ready for some sweet talk.
Stefan, when we were talking about Thanksgiving last week, I forgot to mention my Parker House rolls.
Oh, I love a Parker House roll. Do tell.
So I did not know what a Parker House roll was. I just wanted to make some dinner rolls. And a couple years ago, I did a search for some easy dinner rolls to make at the holidays. And the Bobby Flay recipe for Parker House rolls popped up.
Okay.
And I've been making them every year since then. And I don't necessarily think they're important to have at the Thanksgiving dinner, but I think they're vital for leftovers because there is nothing better than a turkey or a ham sandwich on these little Parker House rolls the day after Thanksgiving. They have a sweetness to them, which was so funny. One of my friends who was over for Thanksgiving, she ate one and she looked at me and she said, "Andrea, this is so sweet. How do you do that?" And I said, "Well, it has half a cup of sugar in
the
recipe."
How.
And of course, some lovely melted butter that you brush across the top of the roll. So I just want to make sure that I put that out there because I do think a Parker House roll is something that's actually pretty easy to make. And you can, you know, get the dough going early Thanksgiving morning, let it do its first rise. I shaped it into the balls about 2 hours before Thanksgiving dinner.
Okay.
And I'm lucky enough to have two ovens. So I was able to cook it right before Thanksgiving dinner and serve them warm from the oven. I know a lot of people don't have that luxury and they may, you know, you could cook it ahead of time. They're just as good, you know, a couple of hours or even a day old.
Sure. I mean, they probably don't have that long of a baking time. You could take the turkey out while the turkey's resting, then you could maybe bake your rolls then.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad you brought this up because I'm not sure you know that I actually stayed on my honeymoon at the Parker House Hotel in Boston where the Parker House roll was created.
No, I know nothing about. I just know that I made the recipe and it's good. That's the extent of my knowledge.
They are good. A nice soft dinner roll, which is kind of a crucial thing for me.
Yeah,
so.
They were lovely.
Thank you for not letting that slip by without mentioning it. So.
I thought it was important. Yeah.
I know. Hey, what else is going on this week outside of the kitchen?
Well, decorating for the holidays, and we got our tree, and our tradition is as we are decorating our tree that we put our favorite Christmas movie on the TV and watch it as we're decorating, and that is Elf.
Of course.
Will Ferrell.
Me too. Oh, the best. That movie's only gotten better with age, I think, too.
It's just so fabulous. You know, Amy Sedaris and James Caan, it just has some of the best lines that we say throughout the year.
Yes.
And it's always fun if you find that there's someone around you who knows the show and you can say a line and they'll kind of get that knowing look on their face or give you a little giggle.
They do. My one problem with that movie is that Zooey Deschanel, they've tried to make her a blonde and it's not working for me.
Yeah.
She's got such a beautiful, beautiful complexion and those big eyes and that dark hair. And I'm not sure why they needed to dye her hair for that. So.
No, I found that unnecessary as well. And it always throws me when I see her in other shows because I watch Elf so consistently that in my head she kind of is a blonde, and then when I see her as a brunette I'm always a little confused.
What? Anyways, very small quibble with a classic movie. We always do It's a Wonderful Life, my husband and I, and so we have George Bailey with Bailey's. That's our little
tradition.
So.
I love it.
But we'll do a family movie night, and Elf is consistently the choice, too. So, although this year, we might introduce A Christmas Story to the kids. You know that
okay.
one?
Yeah. Yeah. They've never
seen that one.
Red Rider?
The BB gun.
Okay.
You got it. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Fabulous.
So many.
Well, you might have to buy your son a leg lamp after you see that one.
As long as it's not a BB gun, that's okay. So.
Well, let's talk about fudge. Success, failure, this was my recipe. So why don't you go first and tell me, how did it work out for you?
Oh, I love this fudge so much. Thank you for introducing it into my life. Thank you, Donna Bishop, for having this delicious fudge. This was so easy. It's almost gone. I gave some to some guys who were working they were doing some tree pruning for me. They almost started crying.
That's a good sign. When you can make your pruners weep.
I know. My children, you know, it's called Happy People Fudge. Every time my son takes a bite, he'll say, "I'm a happy person."
And oh,
it's
I love
so
it.
True. It's a beautiful fudge. It's gorgeous. I don't know what the chemistry here is, but it is glossy and shiny, and it's beautiful. It just tastes wonderful. That combination of the marshmallows and the, I'm guessing, the sweetened condensed milk. It's almost chewy in a mm-hmm. wonderful way. Mm-hmm. I'm a total nuts in person for my fudge. And I think it's crucial with something like fudge that is so sweet. You need that little break of crunch and a little kind of salty taste.
I agree.
So I would never not have a nut in my fudge, but you know. It was, did I say it was easy? It looks like the finished product, but it's a cheat because it looks so much harder than it was. So
you're starting from ingredients that are already done, right? The chocolate chips, the marshmallows, which I don't know about your household, but I almost always have those in my house.
Yes, indeed.
I did have to make a modification. The recipe calls for 2 cups of semi-sweet chocolate chips and 1 cup of milk chocolate chips. I had stocked up on chocolate chips at the beginning of the holiday season when they were on sale. And then my daughter had asked me if she could eat some because she likes to have that, like, actually as a dessert. You know, she'll put a couple in a little cup and that'll be her dessert for the night.
Yeah.
And I'm realizing now I need a new system in my pantry so that she will know which ones are available for eating and which ones need to be saved for baking.
Got it.
Because it turned out she ate all of the milk chocolate ones. So
right.
I made mine with 2 cups of semi-sweet and 1 cup of bittersweet, which I love dark chocolate. So
that sounds great.
For me, it just turned out perfectly. And that got me thinking, I bet you could modify this with all the different types of chocolate chips out there. So you could do a butterscotch. You could do a white chocolate, you know.
Peanut butter chip.
Don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah. I did the straight recipe. And I just thought everything came together so well, so easy. It's actually fun. Now, this isn't something you experienced because you made yours without a microwave. Mm-hmm. But in the microwave recipe, you kind of stir everything together and you put it in to melt. And the marshmallows, like, grow and get, like, big and puffy. And it's just kind of funny.
Well, that's fun for kids, too. If you have kids helping, they probably like that piece.
So this, my first batch is almost gone, and we are early in the month of December. This is going to be made many times, not only this month, but for years to come. So do you have any experience freezing this fudge? I'm just wondering. Some people do put theirs in the freezer before, you know.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know how this would do.
I have never frozen it. I typically give it away, so... you know, it could be that people who receive it might have frozen it, but I personally never have. That's a good question. I don't know. I've tasted other people's fudge. That my only complaint about other fudge is sometimes I felt like it's been grainy. And I don't know if that's the recipe or
So this was my husband's big complaint about fudge, too. And I think that is a cooked fudge that has gone somehow wrong.
Oh, okay.
And so you just avoid all of that with this this fudge. Absolutely. There was
it's never
the
grainy.
Furthest thing from grainy. It is silky smooth.
Yeah, it's always creamy. So
if you want nothing but compliments and happy people, then make happy people fudge.
I also did touch base with Donna to ask her if she's had any success doubling or tripling the recipe, because I find I make so much of this during the holidays. And she said no. She just make it the way it's designed. mind. And I think to get that glossiness, you need to get a really good, you know, you need to whip it really good.
Yep.
And she did say she tried doubling it once and then putting it in the 9x13 pan, and she just thought it didn't turn out as good. So
and you
stick with the straight recipe.
You do run into that with, there's something about the amount and how the ingredients interact at a certain level that you don't want to mess with. And mm-hmm. and so, yeah, just mm-hmm. do yourself a favor and just like start an assembly line of making this fudge. It's so good. Yeah. So good.
Listeners, feel free to do what I do, which is when I cut it into squares to give it to people, I always save the edges for myself.
A great tip. Thank you, Andrea.
I justify it from a hospitality perspective, saying mm-hmm. that I want to give them just perfectly square pieces. But yes. honestly, it's just to keep some for myself.
Oh, you're such a generous I know. Spirit, just, Andrea.
I'm really a giver.
You absolutely are. Should we talk about another holiday favorite?
Yes.
Cookies.
It's
cookie time. So Andrea and I are each going to share one of our favorite cookies that we make at holiday time, and Andrea will make my favorite, and I will make her favorite, and we'll post both out there. So listeners, you could make whichever strikes your fancy, or hopefully both of them. Andrea, you have shared with me a delightfully sounding ginger cookie that is from Cook's Illustrated, a soft and chewy molasses ginger cookie. Can you tell me a little bit about how long you've been making this cookie and why you like it?
Yes. Well, I first tried this cookie at a Christmas Eve party at my next door neighbor. Actually, back when I lived near you, and so you know who that neighbor was. Her daughter babysat for you.
I do know.
Yes. And so I had it at their house, and I just absolutely died. I was like, this is the best cookie I have ever had. Yeah. And I got the recipe, and I started making it. It just hits all the high points for me. It's a bit unusual. It's not like your typical, you know, Christmas cookie. It's got some black pepper in the recipe, so a little hint of a different type
Love
of spice
that.
And obviously
yes.
some ground ginger. And then my favorite part is it's slightly underbaked with
yes!
cracks in the cookie.
Oh.
And that for me is just, you can pretty much do anything to a cookie, but if you underbake it and have cracks in it, I'm on board. So,
you know, I saw that in the instructions, and it says, you know, it will be cracked. It will not be fully set. Do not overbake.
Right.
And there's also something I find that when the instructions say, leave on the cookie sheet, you know, pull it out of the oven, but leave it on the cookie sheet for 5 minutes. There's something about whatever that does. My favorite chocolate chip cookie recipe also mm-hmm. calls for that.
Yes.
And there's just something about kind of letting it deflate while it's
yes.
still warm.
Yeah.
Oh, I cannot wait to try these cookies. I'm so excited.
Well, I hope you're going to like them. How about yours? What am I going to be baking?
So you are making an almond butter blossom with a little bit of a variation, because I also put some peanut butter in my blossoms. You know, many people do a variation of this with either jam or another kind of filling. It's your classic cookie with the indent, and these are filled with a chocolate kiss. This is a recipe I've been making for several years. It was from a Better Homes and Gardens reader, a reader recipe winner, and I love them. They have a little bit of health to them, which I find important.
Oh, really?
But you would never know. It's the best kind of health. You never know. It's got a little whole wheat flour in it, and that's really important. I would not suggest that you sub on that. It really does. It does make it a little firmer. Again, you can't tell. You know, what I liked about this cookie also, you have, so the original recipe calls for, I think, a third of a cup of almond butter. And what I've found just in playing around over the years, I'll fill that third of a cup measure with more like two-thirds of creamy peanut butter and one-third of almond butter. And I like that for me. I like that. You could certainly stick to the original and do all almond butter. That would be delicious too. But I like that consistency and the texture and the taste that I get from the combo of the nut butters. Mm.
Well, I'm excited about this one because I love almond butter. My husband loves peanut butter, and my daughter loves Hershey's Kisses. So
it's tailor-made for your family.
I think this is going to be the trifecta of
I'm so
ingredients.
Happy. I'm so happy. And, you know, another thing I appreciate about both of the recipes that we chose is they don't make a ton. Mm-hmm. And at a time of year when I'm wanting to bake a lot of different cookies, mm-hmm. I like that.
Yes.
I can see the appeal and the necessity for, you know, a batch that makes like 60 cookies. Mm-hmm. But I like having a little of everything. And
I do
so
too.
So that's something I appreciate about
both those.
I do too.
And just from a time perspective, a lot of times all I have time for is two cookie sheets and then I, you know, I need to move on to something else. So
yep,
this is
yep.
really perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we will post those recipes on our Facebook page and on our website, and we hope that you will bake along with us.
Absolutely. Are you making any other cookies this season, Andrea?
Yes, so this weekend is my second annual cookie workshop.
Oh.
Where I have a lovely friend named Barb who's going to come and join me. She is a absolute Christmas cookie master. And we make our dough ahead of time. So she has a sugar cookie dough recipe and a gingerbread cookie dough. We make that ahead of time. And then we have all the cookie cutters. And then we have the various sprinkles and sparkles and candy canes and googly eyes and everything you can imagine. We send each other pictures of our inventory this week so we could both go to the store and stock up and make sure we have everything we need.
Nice.
And she has a daughter as well. So we put the girls at one table and, you know, they kind of go to town with the regular frosting that you get in a can.
Okay.
And that's what they decorate with. And then Barb and I go to my dining room table, which is like a, you know, 10-foot table. And we lay out all our cookies and we use the royal icing. And
okay.
she is a beautiful decorator and has a very steady hand. And her cookies are just incredibly professionally looking.
Like works
mine,
of art, yeah.
Yeah, mine mm-hmm. not so much, but they still
it's
taste
right.
good. And, you know, they're good enough. And they're homemade, and it's really fun. What I like to do with those is when I give, like, teacher gifts or neighbor gifts is to give a few of those cookies with, you know, if I'm giving someone a gift card or something, it feels a little bit more personal.
Yeah, and it's such a nice tradition that you guys have, too. I love yeah. that about it.
Yeah. How about you? Yeah. Do you have any other Christmas cookies or holiday cookies you make this time of year?
I do. So I usually, well, in addition to my thumbprints, I have another ginger cookie I make, too, that may be supplanted by yours, but it's called a Joe Frogger. I know.
What?
Hilarious, right? It's called a Joe Frogger, but wait, it gets better. And the Joe Frogger is a ginger cookie, but it has the addition of about half a cup of dates, and you mince them up or kind of pulverize them in the food processor. And then you also add rum. And they're really, really moist. They're, but they're a lot of work. And so I'm kind of hoping that your recipe is going to take the place of that for me.
Yeah.
But yes, Joe Frogger. I'll also do a rolled cookie, either a gingerbread or a sugar cookie. My very favorite sugar cookie recipe comes from one of my very favorite holiday one of my very favorite cookbooks, and it's called the Better Homes and Gardens Holiday Cookbook, and it was published in 1959, and I think there's something about old-fashioned recipes sometimes. The dough is just really, really soft and easy to work with.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. So if I do make a sugar cookie, that's where that recipe comes from. But
oh,
I'm also going
so
to try to branch out maybe. My good friend Lydia made me a cookie a few years ago, and it's a Martha Stewart recipe. It's a pistachio fennel cookie.
Ooh.
And Lydia isn't definitely in the crispy cookie mm-hmm. camp,
mm-hmm.
and I'm usually not. But these are like an elegant grown-up cookie,
mm-hmm.
and they're really pretty with the pistachio with that kind of light green. They'd be really perfect for like your afternoon cup of tea and then having this little pistachio fennel on the side.
As soon as you said pistachio fennel, I thought, you know, you're not a coffee drinker. You love your tea. And I can see you, and you know, enjoying that in the afternoon with a cup of your tea.
It is. It feels very, very elegant and glamorous somehow. So, you know, the idea would be if Lydia would just make me another batch of those. So, Lydia, if you're listening, here's my official request. I think I might also try, we talked last episode about the Southern Living that's on newsstands right now. And they had,
mm-hmm.
They have a really extensive double issue, but they had some cookies that sound great. A chocolate bourbon fudge ball was one. And then a peachy pistachio icebox cookie, which is kind of in keeping with my pistachio fennel there. So I may try some new ones, but
nice.
Happy baking.
Well,
to
I can't wait to see some pictures.
And we are going to have our first preheated guest on the podcast now. Yes. Andrea was lucky enough to interview Anne Lundholm of Stick of Butter Studios recently. And they had a really funny and nostalgic and profound and insightful and, well, just go ahead and listen for yourself.
Please welcome guest Anne Lundholm from the Stick of Butter Studios in New Brighton, Minnesota.
Hello. Hello. How are you?
I'm good. It's so exciting to have you here.
I'm so happy to be here. I've listened to every episode of the show. I found myself having lots of thoughts about Baker's Joy and Bundt Cakes, and I was like, I want to be on there talking about it. So I'm so excited to be here with you now.
Oh, good. Well, now I'm really sorry Stefan isn't here because she would love to talk to someone else who has the Baker's Joy fan club she's started. Well, let me just let our listeners know how I learned about you. So I listen to a podcast called Too Beautiful to Live, or TBTL. It's one of my favorite podcasts. And then I started listening to another podcast about that podcast. And that podcast is called Little Red Bandwagon. And that's your podcast. And you're one of the four co-hosts. I think you guys have four.
Oh, who even knows anymore?
it's a motley crew. It's actually a lovely group of people that get together and talk about this other podcast. So one thing I noticed was when Anne was introduced, one of the first things that caught my attention was that they introduced her from the Stick of Butter Studios. And I thought that was such a perfect name. Did you come up with that or did someone give you that term?
Well, I kind of stole it. I have a former coworker who is also a baking enthusiast, and she always said that if she ever wrote a cookbook, she was going to call it the Stick of Butter Cookbook. And then she and I started just a pie in the sky dream of opening our own bakery, and we said we'd call it the Stick of Butter Bakery. So I just took it shamelessly when I started on LRB.
Well, Stefan and I have both said one of our guiding themes is that we're not afraid of butter. So I thought it was perfect. And then I noticed that often when you were kind of doing your intros at the beginning of the podcast, you would mention baking. So if it hadn't clued me in enough that you were coming from the Stick of Butter Studios, I heard you saying things like, I think I was listening once and you were talking about it being bar month.
Yes.
Is that so? Tell me about that.
Well, I love to bake, but I am single and I live alone. So I have a little bit of a problem with having baked goods sitting around. So I never baked as much as I wanted to. But then a few years ago, I decided that, basically I said, the hell with it. The heck with it. I love to bake. I'm going to bake and I'm going to bring it in and foist it off on my coworkers. And so I've been baking something and bringing it into the office every Monday for the last almost 3 years now. And in this past year, I decided to do themed months. So one of the months was bar month. And I made just different kinds of bars. And I had a pie month. And I had several cake months because I find that I have a lot of different cakes that I need to make.
Right. Well, we found that idea very inspiring. And so just as you stole Stick of Butter Studios, we stole the bar month theme. And when we came up with the same idea working on our podcast, we're like, every month we'll pick a different baked item and work on that. So we stole that shamelessly from you.
It's great. It helps me to focus because otherwise when I go look for recipes, it's like, where do I even begin? Because there's 9 million recipes to pick from. And if I at least have a genre, I guess, of dessert to go with, it helps me eliminate a little bit of searching.
Well, thank you for being an inspiration for our preheated podcast. I when I was thinking about starting the podcast, one of the things I realized was how often when I was listening to Little Red Bandwagon that I was looking forward to your updates, your baking updates. And aww. So at a certain point, it only took me about, 10 episodes before I went, oh, maybe I could do a podcast about baking since I'm living for these 1 to 2 minute updates every week.
And you guys sound so great. You sound so professional and polished already.
Oh, gosh. Well, thank you. Well, let's start out by talking about how you started baking and if you started when you were a child or if it was something you stumbled into later in life or if you're a home baker or you've had any formal type of baking training.
Well, I can tell you I haven't had any formal baking training other than taking the foods class in eighth grade, where we made all kinds. I remember making popovers, and that's about it. That's as far as my training goes. And beyond that, it's just watching cooking shows on TV. But I have been baking since I was a child. And my mom is a good cook, and she is sort of an indifferent baker. She would make us cakes for our birthday, mm-hmm. and then occasionally cookies or something for something else. But she had this one cookbook. It's a classic. It's the Betty Crocker cookie book.
Oh, yeah.
When I was a child, I pored over that book. Like, I have so many of the pages almost memorized.
Oh, and I love it.
The wonderful thing, I mean, it's the, I found a used bookstore copy a few years ago, and it's the 1963 edition. And I don't want anything more updated than that because it's so perfect. There's this one picture in there that has a table, like a kitchen table, that has a pan of brownies and a jar of frosted cookies and some platters of cookies. And then there's a tub of ice cream and some sodas, like orange sodas and glass bottles. And there's a fridge kind of in the corner that's partly open. You can see more sodas in there. And there's a letter sweater and a vinyl record on there. So it's clearly set up for teens. And there's a note kind of in the back of the picture that says, "Have fun. Please clean up the mess, Mom." And that was my little fantasy world, because that is not the kind of mom I had that would leave eight kinds of treats for me and my friends to just dive into.
And so, a cute little note.
Yes.
I mean, oh my gosh. I think that's everyone's fantasy mom there. And that's probably a lot of mom's fantasies too. And instead, most of us are hauling out the bag of Chips Ahoy and throwing it
right
on the table.
But right. So I looked and looked and looked at all the pictures in that cookie book, not that there's a lot. And that's what I started baking from. And it was almost exclusively the chocolate chip cookie recipe.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have the imagination or the skills to do much more than that. And I was about 10, I think, when I started doing this. But we were living in Switzerland at the time. We moved to Europe when I was pretty small, and we spent almost a decade there. And the thing about living in Europe is they don't have chocolate chips.
So as soon as you said you were living in Europe, that was my first thought, because I had a friend living in Germany for a while, and she would send me an email occasionally and say, "Could you please send me these items? I'll reimburse you for the shipping." And chocolate chips was always one of the things on the list.
Yes, exactly. I don't know if they even to this day really have the concept of chocolate chips in Europe. It's such an American thing.
That was just 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So at least in Germany, they didn't. So were they not making chocolate chip cookies, or would they just buy chocolate and break it up into chunks?
Well, somehow that never occurred to me. The idea that you could just chop up a nice bar of Swiss chocolate. I don't know that.
You were in Switzerland.
Right. But my dad used to come back every so often to the States for business trips. So my mom would send a list along with him of the things that she wanted him to bring back. And chocolate chips were often on that list. And I remember one time she wrote down on the list 12-ounce bag chocolate chips. And my dad read it as 12 bags of chocolate chips. And the day those 12 bags of chocolate chips came out of the suitcase is literally one of the happiest days of my life.
Oh my gosh, I can imagine your face.
Yes, and so I made quite a few batches of chocolate chips from that bag.
I bet you did. Oh gosh, that's a great story.
And then I continued on with baking, you know, a little bit through my teenage years, but it wasn't until I bought a house about 8 years ago that I finally had the kitchen space to do more ambitious things. And that's when I would say I really started baking.
Okay. And so it sounds like now you're on a schedule. You said you bring baked goods in every Monday. So I'm assuming you baking on the weekend. Is that how you sort of fit it into your life?
I do. You know, it depends on what I've got going on. And how complicated the recipe is. Like when I bake pies, I usually bake them over a 3-day period. I'm sure you're well experienced with that, but I'll often make the dough on Friday night and then roll it and shape it in the pan on Saturday and then make the filling on Sunday.
Right.
I'm very organized.
We must be organized with our baked goods.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite thing to bake?
Well, I would say cake. I just love the construction of cake and putting it all together and the almost infinite number of combinations that you can get from cake. If I'm going to narrow it down to a particular kind of cake, I really get jazzed at baking angel food cakes because it's such a funny thing to watch the chemistry of that. And it's so particular a thing to do. And it's so easy to do it wrong. Not that it's complicated. You just have to, like any good baker, follow the rules and not be tempted to walk your own path. It, as long as you follow the recipe, it'll turn out. But it's such an interesting chemical process. Like, I'm sure you watched the Great British Baking Show, right?
Yes, yes.
They had a challenge on there a few years ago where it was to bake an angel food cake. And for anybody that doesn't watch, they do a technical challenge where the bakers come into it blind, where they're just given a recipe and the ingredients. And the recipe is not obscured, but they may leave a few things out and force the bakers to use their knowledge and their understanding of how baking works to compensate for the holes in the recipe. And watching that angel food cake challenge, I was sitting there hollering at my screen, no, don't grease the pan. Don't grease the pan.
Right, because it needs to climb up the sides, right?
Yes, exactly. They were just making a slippery wall for the cake to keep sliding back down.
Oh, no. I can see you yelling at the screen now.
I had a friend. I evangelized about the Great British Baking Show so much. I had a friend who watched it. She's not a baker. And she texted me, I watched 90 seconds of it, and it was so boring, I had to stop. And I was like, what?
What?
It's the most fascinating show ever.
I guess that just goes to show you, I'm sure there are shows that I could watch and maybe only last about 30 seconds, but
yes.
I could watch the British Baking Show all weekend. So,
absolutely.
What would you say is the dessert that people request the most from you, whether it's, you know, family or maybe birthday request or the kind of thing that you're especially known for?
Well, it's a little difficult because I don't like to repeat myself. And so why would I ever make a tried and true recipe when I can make something I've never tried before and fly by the seat of my pants? And my family is very good natured at sort of accepting what I bring them. But I will say there is one recipe that I get requested at my office, and that is what my coworkers call the cake.
Oh.
And it's a chocolate peanut butter cake.
Oh.
It's a chocolate sour cream 3-layer cake with a peanut butter cream cheese frosting
has
a chocolate peanut butter ganache poured over the top. Amazing recipe. And normally on Mondays when we get together at around 9:30 or 10 to break out the treats, we just chat and catch up on what our weekends were like. But when I bring the cake, there's dead silence because we're all concentrating on the cake.
I love it. Oh my gosh. My husband loves peanut butter. I wonder if I should try that one out for him.
Yes. It's from a cookbook that's called, I think it's Sky High Triple Layer Cakes or something. But I originally found it on a wonderful website called SmittenKitchen.com.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So if you search on Smitten Kitchen for that chocolate peanut butter cake, you'll find it.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Wonderful.
I'll definitely look for that one because it sounds amazing. So that sounds like your best cake. Any memorable baking fails or things that haven't worked out?
Well, I have a little bit of a baking kryptonite, and that is things that are made in springform pans. And I don't know like what it is. Cake? Yeah, anything that you would bake in a spring form.
Huh.
I think part of it is that my oven runs a little slow.
Oh.
Like if the recipe says to bake it for 50 to 60 minutes, I usually end up baking it for about 75.
Mm-hmm.
So I always set the timer for the very high end of the range and then go mm-hmm. from there. And I don't know, because I've taken the oven thermometer and I've measured the temperature of the oven and it seems to come up to the right temperature. But for some reason, everything takes a lot longer. And I remember I baked something called a Spanish meringue cake once, and I let that thing bake forever. And I thought it must be done. And then when I took it to work the next day, it was almost raw in the middle.
Oh no. And that's
that
raw
really
eggs.
Yikes.
Oh no.
I'm a little leery of springform pans just because I seem to have so much trouble with them.
Oh, interesting. Have you ever tried the overnight cheesecake recipe?
I have not.
I wonder if that might work for you. I haven't tried it myself, but it's been on my list of things to do. And you start it the night before and cook it at an incredibly low temperature. So maybe if your oven is running slow or cold anyway, that might be a good one. I'll see if I can find that one for you and send it to you.
Interesting. Well, I did decide to tackle my fears because December is cheesecake month. So I'm going to make this work.
Yeah, that's a perfect month for cheesecakes, I think, because the weather, I mean, you know, they sit up so nicely and they're easy to, I think easier to transport if you're taking them to parties and that type of thing. They're not as jiggly as other things or as delicate.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, that's great. So where do you find most of your recipes? What's your favorite source?
I have a number of different places that I look. I have a small collection of cookbooks. I really liked, I'll call it the Baked series. There's a Baked Explorations, Baked Occasions, Baked Ingredients maybe by these two guys who own a bakery called Baked in Red Hook. And that's in Brooklyn, I think.
Okay.
And their brownie was featured a few years ago as one of Oprah's favorite things. And they saw an explosion of business from that. And I think that's how I became aware of them. But their cookbooks are so beautiful. Just gorgeous, glossy pictures. Yes, I really like them. Everything that I make from there turns out very well. And then I also love America's Test Kitchen. Because how can you go wrong? If they are going to make a cheesecake, they make 50 of them. And they get it so that it's perfect. And I've never had a recipe disaster from them.
No, they are definitely the source. I'm going to take on some of my challenges in the months coming up. And that's always the first place I turn to. Because I have a tendency to go a little rogue in recipes. And if I understand the reasoning why, I mean, even today I was making something and it called for a cream of tartar. And I remember as I was going into the pantry, I thought to myself, I'm not sure if I have any of this. I'll just skip it. And, you know, if I've read the Cook's Illustrated that explained what is cream of tartar and why do you need it, then I'm not as likely to do that kind of thing because I'll be like, oh, I know I need that for the lift or, you know, whatever it is that's it's going to be doing. So, I do appreciate all that kind of scientific effort they put into it and their willingness to replicate because I'm like you. I don't like doing the same thing twice. Mm-hmm. So I'm not necessarily going to get a lot better at a particular recipe by continuing to tinker just one ingredient or one method and then make it again and test it, you know, that's not going to happen probably.
No, right. And I have there, I think it's called the America's Test Kitchen Family Baking Book, which is like a big binder book of recipes. And they're not fancy, but they just turn out so perfectly every time. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we're all about. Not fancy, but we want it to turn out well because it's, you know, it costs money to buy good ingredients and it takes time. And a lot of times someone's counting on you. Like, you know, you're showing up with the cake for the party or the dinner. So it needs to be good.
Right. And I find that people don't always see the difference or taste the difference between a good, sturdy recipe and something fancy with 40 steps that you worked on over 4 days. That doesn't matter to them. It's just the end product and how that tastes.
I think you're right. Especially things that are beautiful, but once you slice them up and put them on the plate, you know?
Yes.
That's really what they're going for. So
that's my argument with wedding cakes these days. Yeah. You see so many beautiful wedding cakes all covered in fondant, but I can't imagine that they taste good.
No. And, you know, you can actually taste wedding cakes if you go to a bakery in your town and tell them that you're preparing a wedding. And you can try different samples. And I've been shocked with how many brides-to-be that I've spoken to that haven't done the testing. You know, they've picked just based on the looks. And obviously the look of the cake is important. And they're thinking about their pictures and what they want it to look like. But, man, I took advantage. I eloped. And I still took advantage of that testing. I went to numerous bakeries and told them I was getting married.
Well, why would you pass up an opportunity for a free cake?
I know. Well, I know I've taken a lot of your time and you probably have to get back into your kitchen. So I'll wrap up here with one final question. If you could only have one dessert for the rest of your life, what would it be?
This is a very unfair question. I was pondering what it would be. And I was really, as soon as I decided on one thing, I thought, oh, but what if, I was like, well, ice cream, of course. But no, but what about chocolate cake with chocolate frosting? No, but what about cinnamon rolls? No, but what about... But I think if I have to go back to basics and say one thing that really hits the spot for me, it's out of that original Betty Crocker cookie book. And they call them butterscotch brownies. I think it's what we would probably call some sort of blondie.
Like a brownie bar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's just brown sugar and butter and flour and a little leavening and salt and an egg. And you just bake it in a pan and they're quite flat. Like they don't quite have the height that a brownie would normally have. But and they're almost like a chocolate chip cookie without the chocolate chips, but they're just... They're so simple and they take me back to those early days of baking. And I think that's probably what I would choose.
I like that. It's nice and simple. And it, I think, has that nostalgic childhood memory associated with it, which sounds like it brings back a really good memory for you. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for talking with me, Anne. It's time to say goodbye. Remember, you can listen to Anne on her podcast, The Little Red Bandwagon. Thank you, Anne, and happy baking.
And happy baking to you, Andrea.
Andrea, I so wish I could have been with you and Anne. You know, I was laughing listening because she's referencing the Betty Crocker cookie cookbook, which of course I have. And she's talking about that picture. And I know exactly what she's talking about. So as soon as I finished listening, I ran and got my book. And there it is. And it is hysterical. Anne, I feel like we're soul sisters. You did not leave out. The description is hysterical. It looks like, you know, mom left the goodies for after the game or, you know, the weekend study club. But the thing Anne failed to mention, which I find hilarious about this picture also, is so there's the table with all the goodies. And in the background is a refrigerator. And the fridge door is ajar. And stacked kind of mile high in the fridge are packages of hot dogs. Which just cracks me up. It's like, you know, like teens love to eat hot dogs. I don't know. It's clearly like a teen centered,
like weenie,
you know.
Weenie roast.
Exactly. Oh, exactly. I loved your interview, and thanks so much to Anne for being our first guest. That was awesome.
Yes, it was so much fun to talk to her. And as soon as she mentioned her love for Baker's Joy, I knew she would be your spiritual baking sister.
That's right.
And just her level of organization and how she sort of plots out her baking. I know for me, I work from home, and there's not a whole lot I miss about working in an office. But when she talked about her Monday mornings is when she brings her baked goods into her office, and everyone in the office gathers around, and they start eating and chatting about the week ahead about 9:30, 10 o'clock on a Monday morning, I immediately thought, oh, I wish I could work at that office. It just sounded so great.
Yes, maybe it's not that we want to work in any office again. It's that we want to work at Anne's office. So
at that, and you know, work is a very loose term.
Can we just come in on Mondays for for her goodies. Yeah.
Could we be invited to the Monday morning meeting only? So thank you, Anne. And we hope that you all enjoyed listening to us talk as well.
Well, we're going to quickly wrap up talking about some kind of cute and clever ways that you can pack up all these gifts that are pouring out of your kitchen this time of year. And most of us know how to repurpose your oatmeal container, a roll of cookies, you know, using baskets or tins, or I love to put things in mason jars. I inherited several boxes of mason jars from my mother, and I'm slowly working my way through them. You know, some other ways that you and I have talked, Andrea, looking at certain stores that might not be at the top of your mind, but like a Marshalls or a TJ Maxx or a Ross. Sometimes, since those stores have kind of interesting turnover, you can sometimes find really cute and creative things at low cost.
I found those paper baking, like if you were going to make small loaf pans like banana bread or pumpkin bread.
Right.
They also had baking cups. I'm not quite sure what you would use those for. They were more like, in my head, they were the size of like a creme brulee container, but I don't think I would use a paper cup for creme brulee, so I haven't thought about what that would be for.
Oh, I know.
So do you know what the baking cups are used for?
I think I might. So I think I just talked about my favorite holiday cookbook, the holiday cookbook from Better Homes and Gardens. So in their fruitcake section, they make these things called fruitcake balls. And so you would make, you could make two and then put them together. And so you'd have like a globe of fruitcake. Maybe I'll have to post a picture of this. I'll have to scan it though. Yes, so if you could picture in your disposable liner there and then just kind of like putting two together. Yeah, fruitcake ball. Consider it.
Okay, interesting.
Because you're right. You wouldn't want to do any kind of custard or anything in that. That would be a mess.
No. The other thing I wanted to mention, you had brought up last week with your purchased Thanksgiving pie, the gingerbread pumpkin pie.
Right.
How nice it was that it came in a real glass dish.
Yes.
And when I give people pies, I try not to put them in the disposable pie tins. My Goodwill has so many Pyrex glass pie dishes. It's not even funny.
Yep.
They're almost always priced at 99 cents. And, you know, Goodwill will put those sales on where everything's 50% off. So you can get them for 50 cents each, which I think is about the cost of the disposable one. So I'll pick up a ton of those. I have a ton of just those glass Pyrex baking dishes. And that way, when I give someone a pie, I can say, you know, feel free to keep the pie dish. You know, you can return it to me if you want, but you don't need to. And so I think that's a really nice way to give someone a gift.
It is really nice. And it's also just thoughtful, you know, if that's not someone you maybe see all the time, or, you know, then they're worried, oh, I got to get this dish back. Or more worried, like, where's my dish? Like, why haven't they given it back yet? Yeah. You know, you can just take that out of the equation.
Yeah.
A really cute packaging thing that I've seen recently is to take a small milk carton, like a quart size milk carton, and to, obviously it's empty, you cut off one side and clean it out, and then you fill it with cookies, so then you have milk and cookies. Get it? So
cute.
Oh,
that's cute. Yeah. I like that.
Yep.
Okay. I don't do really fancy packaging for my fudge. I ship some out this week, and what I do is just wrap it. I do go ahead and, you know, I chill it in the refrigerator, and then I bring it out. I let it cool to room temperature before I cut it, and I cut it into the squares, and then I wrap all of it in one layer of plastic wrap. I don't wrap each piece individually, but the whole thing in one layer of plastic wrap. And then I spoke with Donna Bishop, the recipe maven that came up with that, and she suggested then taking that piece and placing it inside another plastic bag, which then she ties with kind of a festive holiday ribbon.
Okay.
So that's kind of fun. If you make the 9x9 pan recipe, it will slice up into I think of it as two servings that you could mail to people in the small United States Postal Service priority mailbox.
Which I'm sure they had fudge in mind when they designed that.
So I don't know if you guys have used Priority Mail for shipping baked goods, but I have to say it is the way to go. So first of all, if you go to the Postal Service online store, you can order holiday shipping priority boxes for free, and they will deliver them to your house.
Yep.
So you can do that. And then you can print out your shipping label from home. And yep. So you've got whatever baked goods you made, they're in your priority box. You've got the shipping label printed out and ready to go. You could take it even a step further and schedule a pickup so that the postal person comes to your house and takes it. So you never even have to leave your house if you want to ship baked goods using U.S. priority mail. And I just find it incredibly helpful. I don't usually do the scheduled pickup at my house because I do have a dog, and I'm afraid that if I left chocolate out on the front porch, it could get ugly and dangerous, since dogs can't have chocolate.
Sure, right.
But I have to tell you, when I went to the post office this week to mail, I mailed some fudge off to Anne to thank her for being an interview, and off to our friend Jeremy, who helped us get this podcast started.
Right.
And when I walked into the post office, there was a line of about 20 people, and, you know, everyone just looked like they wanted to die. I mean, there's nothing worse than standing in line at the post office. And I just walked right up to the counter and dropped my boxes off and smiled and said, like, thank you, happy holidays. And, you know, people were just giving me the death glare. I know.
You should have a little piece of happy people fudge to just hand out to them in line.
So I thought, you know, maybe next time I will do that, because, I mean, the glares I was getting. But for me, it was kind of like being a rock star, or like having that fast pass when you're at Disneyland. I mean, it was just so exciting.
Your mail truly was priority.
Exactly.
And you know what? USPS, if you'd like to sponsor our show after that, you know, really, really nice advertisement, yeah, go and give us a call.
Well, the timer's buzzed, and we've got to get back to our dishes. Join us next week as we dive into the world of sweet snack mixes. We'll also review our cookies and reveal our holiday baking wish list. Our awesome theme music is by Anne-Marie Russell, featuring Nathan Eklund on trumpet. You can find Anne-Marie's music on Amazon and iTunes, or at annemarierussell.com. And remember, you can find us and our featured recipes on our website, preheatedpodcast.com, on Facebook in our preheated group, or on Pinterest. Please download us on iTunes, where we'd love it if you subscribe to the show and give us a review, both of which will help other people find us. Until next time, thanks for listening and sweet dreams. Preheated is written, performed, and edited by Andrea Ballard and Stefan Cohn in association with 24th Floor Productions.